Welcome to Players Next Live. I'm Rob Jeske, founder of Players Next and your host for today's show. For our return listeners, we're glad to have you back. And for first-time listeners, we hope you enjoy the ride. Over the past 40 years, I've lived almost every aspect of youth sports as a multi-sport athlete, a coach, an entrepreneur, and finally as a parent. So what is Players Next in this show all about? Over the past 25 years, youth sports has seen incredible growth. Yet today, the youth sports community still lacks an accessible resource that delivers impartial guidance, tools, and support necessary for players and parents to succeed. In collaboration with experienced athletes, coaches, and parents, Players Next has developed a blueprint for that solution. Our mission is clear: to build the leading resource and community for youth sports. And our plan is realistic: to start the conversation about youth sports, and once people are talking, anything is possible. Before we go any further, I would like to express my thanks to the WCHL team and our sponsors for today's show. Today's show is made possible by Revels Turf and Tractor, your local John Deere dealer, specializing in golf and sports turf equipment solutions for more than 50 years. Revels Turf and Tractor is proud to support the UNC, Duke, NC State, and Durham Bulls field maintenance crews, as well as provide its innovative North Carolina Signature Field program designed to deliver much-needed support to high school athletic facilities. And also Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks. Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks were designed to help kids eat right and do well in school. Their snacks are all natural and loaded with learning, education in every bite. Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks are available at Amazon.com. Simply search Educational Snacks. We'd also like to thank VGM Club, serving the nation's club and sports organization industry, and the Green Beagle Lodge, the Triangle's premium, eco-friendly pet resort and spa. On today's show, we are pleased to have a special guest from the world of football, legendary coach, author, and parent, Bill Renner. Coach Renner coached high school football in Virginia and North Carolina for more than 30 years. During that tenure, Coach Renner won countless awards and sent more than 50 players on to play college football, including two Elite 11 top five quarterbacks in the nation. During his career, Coach Renner invented the five-wide attack spread offense that set records in multiple states and is now used by schools across the country. In addition to his great success as a coach, Bill Renner is the author of multiple books and countless articles on football and performance success. And if that wasn't enough, Coach Renner also lived the sports parent experience as the father of UNC star and NFL quarterback Bryn Renner. Today, Coach Renner is a performance consultant to high school and college teams across the country and trains more than 90 aspiring athletes. Well, Coach Renner, welcome to Players Next Live, and thank you for joining us today.
Rob, thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure, and really enjoyed getting to learn the great journey you've been on. And, Coach, the Triangle area is lucky to have you based in our area. Before we jump into some broader topics that our listeners are interested in, can you share a little bit about what you're doing these days and what you're involved in these days?
Sure. I've retired as a active high school football coach. Did that for 30 years, teaching and coaching. And then what I've started to do now is I train football players and athletes in my own little business called BRF, which is Bill Renner Football. So I teach football skills, all positions, to football players that just want to improve, that want to learn a skill set and a drill set that will allow them to reach their full potential. And so I have a lot of quarterbacks, do some linemen, a lot of kickers and punters, a couple of linebackers. So any position group, young men, you know, want a drill set, want to be able to train. And one of the things I do is when their dads come or their moms, I make them assistant coaches and I teach them how to work with their sons to continue on the training process, you know, when I'm not there with them. So the other thing I do is I give them a daily training plan. So that's what I'm actively involved with now, and work with a couple youth programs to help their organizations and their coaches coach better. And I'm actually coaching the 7-on-7 team in Apex to help those kids. So it's matured into something that I've really enjoyed doing. I meet a lot of great kids and parents in the Triangle area, so I've really enjoyed it.
Well, that's what a great transition to a second chapter. I think that the parent involvement is really a neat idea, because I think A lot of times parents are sitting on the sideline. They want to help, and parents obviously have more access and time with their kids than destination coaches. So I think that's really got to be a great asset to what you're doing.
Yeah, I really enjoy it because I want to foster that the parent working with their son, and they have the desire to do it. I just need to give them the knowledge. And so I teach them a drill set. When they show up, I give them a clipboard with my drill set. They take notes. And I tell them if there's any time you're working with them and you have any questions or you forgot, just call me, because I want there to be that active involvement between the parent and their son, because it's a short time. It goes fast. And what I found is when they're on the same page and they're working toward the same thing, and dad knows exactly what the drill should do and how to coach it, you know, his son gets better because he's watching him, and then the relationship gets better. So it's been really fun to do that, is basically coach the player and the parents.
Well, and you know, not every parent is fortunate to have the knowledge that you have, and I work with my kids in some sports that I have experience in, but not every parent has that, and you're giving them the tools to be a part of the process instead of just sitting on the sideline and hoping. That's terrific. The first line of questions, I think we're going to go through and talk a little bit more 30,000-foot level about football. So share a little bit through your experience over the years, whether it was growing up, then into your years as a coach, and what you're seeing to now. How's the game changed, and how's it evolved during, you know, your time within the game?
When I started out in the game, it was a really the game was based on physicality. The formations were bunched together. It wasn't spread out. And it was kind of man on man, who could push the guy off the line of scrimmage and who could run a guy over if there was a guy ready to tackle you. When I was in college, played at Virginia Tech, it was that way in, you know, the late 70s and early 80s. And what it's become now is it's become a game that all the players are spread out. I believe it's evolved that way because of the size of the players. If you bunch that guys up too much now, the defensive linemen, the linebackers, they're so fast, they're so quick, you simply can't move the ball. So I think it really evolved out of necessity of trying to score the ball, because of the fact that the defenders became so big, strong, and fast. I think Jimmy Johnson had a lot to do with that when he took linebackers and put them in defensive lineman positions, and then they ran so fast you couldn't get away from them, and so then that started everybody thinking the game in a different way, and so I think that transition from a really physical game, and it's still physical, don't get me wrong, but it's not physical within the context of every single play all 11 people are just basically hitting each other.
Right.
It's more of a wide open game. I think an analogy would be how the NBA, like if you look at the Warriors, they all shoot threes now, and it's not a lot of post-up players. And it's gone to that, I think, because of the nature of the athletes.
Well, I think athletes
are better.
And I think that's a tremendous answer, and I think your story about the NBA, I thought of that as you were making that description. And I also think about, you know, it's created. I was reading up on your five wide attack spread, if I said that correctly, it's created new positions now. So instead of just being big and lumped up in the middle, it's created new specialty positions and opportunities.
Absolutely, and it's really equalized the game. I came about my offensive scheme because of necessity, for the exact same reason I articulated. We were playing a team. I had about 1,400 kids in my school, and the other school was one of the largest in Virginia. Robinson High School had 4,000, and we had played them 2 years in a row for the district title and really had trouble running the ball. We really couldn't run the ball. And then the third year, we were playing them for the district title, and I had four linemen going D1 and the best back in the region with 1,800 yards and 28 touchdowns. We ran for 57 yards and lost 35-7. And I go, I'll never be able to run it on them because they're just bigger and they're better. And so then consequently, I went to a spread offense and attacked the field differently and isolated those guys. And then in my last 5 years, we beat them five straight times and knocked them off out of the playoffs three times. So it gave us a different strategy, and it gives people a different strategy. There's still people that will line up and do that, But you just can't do that on a regular basis nowadays because of the skill of the athletes and the size and the quickness.
That's like
Dexter Lawrence playing, starting as a freshman and playing in the national championship game. I mean, you know, you're just not running a ball on a guy like that.
No. And especially when there's 11 of them. So, great insights. We're coming up on our first break here. So we'll take a quick break and be right back and talk more football with Coach Bill Renner. Welcome back to Players Next Live. This segment is brought to you by Revels Turf and Tractor, your local John Deere dealer specializing in golf and sports turf solutions for more than 50 years. I'm your host, Rob Jeske, and we're talking with legendary football coach and author, Bill Renner. And so, Bill, I love that the evolution of the game, particularly from that offensive perspective and how coaches like you have spread it out. So as we move on to another question about the broader side of football. Obviously, there's been talk over the years about injury and the physicality, as you mentioned. But you know, given the way the game has changed through innovators like yourself, and potentially some of the concerns over the size and speed, what's the future model look like in terms of getting young people into football? In terms of how are they being introduced to the game? When do they start putting on pads and the progression from there?
You know, Rob, that's an interesting ongoing debate with that now because of the concussion issue. And there's quite a few people that are in the mindset that you should play 7-on-7 or flag up until they get to middle school type of age where the brain has had time to develop and mature. And then there's the ones that say, well, you know, they don't run fast enough or hit hard enough to have any type of brain problem when they're playing youth football. I don't know that it'll be settled on one way or the other. I think both alternatives will probably survive. But I agree with some of the people on the 7-on-7 and flag football side. You can learn the game without having to have collisions when you're 7, 8, 9, 10. I really don't see that you really need to have the collisions. And most of the times, the kids that are playing, nobody really wants to play lineman anyway. And what my experience has been that I've had kids that have come into my program, and I say, well, what positions you play in youth league? Well, I played lineman, and he ends up being a receiver for me. So it didn't do him any good to play lineman anyway. So, and then the kids that should play lineman are too big because of the height-weight ratio, and so they don't really get taught. So I think you can teach the game without having to have the collisions at that age. I think when they get to 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, then teaching the collision part of the game with a kid that's already had the skill part of the game, I think it would be a lot better in that respect. So I'm kind of in the middle of putting them through a time frame of, hey, let's teach them how to play the game, how to move the right way, how to keep their core balance and posture and stability when they're gonna attack a ball carrier, or how to do leverage and all those kind of things. And then when you add the hitting component, I think you got a safer model of football. So that's where I would be leaning and hope it would progress to. And I think that some type of compromise like that might be in the horizon.
Yeah, I think it's the game's too big and too big a part of our culture to let it fall apart. And I think the compromise and changing the early aspects of the game is a real positive direction. So this is one of our favorite questions to all of our different sports experts that we've had on the show. I'll equate it to football. For a parent that does not play football or didn't play football, and their child comes home tonight and says, I want to take up football as a sport, what should their next steps be?
Well, I always believe if something's on a person's heart, particularly a young person, then you need to let them explore it. And I've had that come up a lot, having been a head coach and at the high school level for a lot of years and worked there. And that's the first thing I ask them. Hey, I really want to play. My mom won't let me. And, sometimes I say, can you talk to my mom? And I think when you have a passion to do something, a lot of times if you'll educate the person and say, okay, you can do it, I'm concerned about it, but let's learn it the right way. So to ease the mom's or the dad's or the parents' or guardians' concern about the contact part of football, if you put the educational part there and the coach says, hey, I'm going to teach him how to move right and put his body in a position, you know, to avoid as many injuries as possible, then they can appease them a little bit and make it more palatable for them to let the young man play. But, you know, I think if whatever the child comes with and is passionate about, you want to encourage that, because the learning part of just learning something is real important at that age, at that youth level. It's, no matter what it is, if they came home and said, hey, I want to start a garden, okay. You know, while that's not, you know, can damage their health, it just develops that mindset of trying to be good at something and that they have a passion about. So I think any sport some young person wants to play at that age should be encouraged by the parent. They should use that as a great learning opportunity to teach them how to learn to do things the right way, whether it's playing football or whatever else they want to be passionate about.
That's a great answer, and I love that, because it applies across beyond sports. You know, find a way to let them follow their ambitions and dreams and be there to support. So for the evolution of the game that you described, and clearly the game has changed because it's not just about size anymore. For the kids that aren't big in stature, what are some of the opportunities to play and enjoy football, whether that's in the middle school or on into the high school or higher?
Yeah, you know, 7-on-7 has really taken off around the country. It's a big deal now. And there's a local organization, NYFO, National Youth Football Organization, that Bob Winstead runs, that kids are participating in. I mean, I have kids that are 10 years old that are playing quarterback and receivers, and I work with a couple of the teams in the area to help them get organized and do that. And they're playing receiver, they're playing linebacker, defensive back, but really what they're doing is they're learning how to move, and they're understanding how to line up in formations. They're understanding how to run routes. They're understanding how to catch. They're understanding how important vision is on defense. So all those things, I think, are a really big advantage for kids when they do that. So that's a good opportunity for you know, young people to get involved with the game earlier. And that organization has teams that are 10U all the way up to the 18U that you can be involved with. The other thing is, we're very fortunate in this area, is that we've got a lot of colleges that have summer camps. And there's a lot of good coaches here. And going to one of those where you get some good instruction and, you know, you get to see the college facilities, you get to be around college coaches, I think that's another great opportunity for the kids in the area, particularly as you get older, to get good instruction and to be introduced to another level of the game. And also, when you go to those, you get a kind of a cross section of people that come from outside the area, so you get to know where your skills stand with regard to that. But so I think there's quite a few ways that they can get some good training in football around here.
That's great. I appreciate those insights for our listeners. Taking a little bit of a turn, you know, specialization versus multiple sports has become a hot topic in the youth sports world. We hear some conflicting opinions, which often leave players and parents a little bit confused. Can you share your thoughts on specialization and share any advice for families that are maybe at that crossroad?
Sure. I think that, going back to the passion part, if a young man has a passion to play at another sport in high school, you get one chance to do some of these sports, and you may not ever do another sport. You should play everything you could in high school. I've never been a proponent of a coach telling a guy, well, you need to do this year round. My son played football, baseball, basketball pretty much since he was 8 years old, year round. And what I tell people is, you can work on a skill when you're doing another sport. For example, when Bren was playing football for me, on Sundays he would shoot basketball because he was going to go play basketball. So we worked on the shooting part of that so that he could make a smooth transition. And then in basketball season on Sundays, he'd hit baseballs. And that never conflicted with the sport, but it allowed the transition of the skill. Too often we're worried that, okay, they'll go to the sport and they can't do it well because they haven't been doing it. So one of the ways to bridge that is just to take one day. You know, usually the Sunday, they're not going to be practicing or doing that in-season sport. And just let them do skill work. And that way you can get the number of reps that he needs that somebody who's just doing one sport exclusively, you know, won't get ahead of you, or or you can get the same amount of reps you're going to need to be able to compete when you go to that sport. So I think they should do everything that they want to do. Do I think it's wrong if one kid just wants to play football? No, but I think it's a personal choice, and you sit down and decide with the young man. And I've had kids that have come to me, a couple really good players over my career that were good baseball players, but they were really good football players. And they say, Coach, I'm going to play baseball in college, and so I'm not going to play my senior year. And I say, hey, understand, you know, because ultimately if you're not passionate about it, if it's not in your heart, you're not going to benefit the program. And that's the advice that I give parents. You know, sit down with them and just say, you know, anything you do, whether whatever job you're in, if you're not happy in it, you're not benefiting the organization, so you might as well move on.
No, that's terrific insight, and both as a coach and a parent, I love your perspective, and I think the golden nugget in that answer was the idea of if you are playing multiple sports, you can do the bridge work, you know, on the weekends in your spare time to get ready for that next one. So we are coming up on another break, and we'll be right back to talk more with Coach Bill Renner on football and sports performance. Welcome back, folks, to Players Next Live. This is our third segment brought to you by Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks, education in every bite. I'm Rob Jeske, and we're pleased again to have legendary coach, author, and performance trainer Bill Renner with us today. So, Bill, we're kind of moving out of the broader football observations and into the actual player, coach, and development phase. For athletes that are starting to show unique upside in football, what are some of your recommendations for their development, as well as how to start getting attention from college coaches when that time horizon arrives?
Yeah, the one of the avenues to follow there is, and it's really gotten earlier in young men's career, is to go to the college one-day prospect camps. It used to be that colleges would have 3 or 4 day camps, and you'd stay overnight, and you know, you'd spend a lot of time with the coaches, and those really just became money makers for the coaches. But now it has evolved into all the colleges have 1 day basically prospect camps where you come in and they have guys that they think they're going to offer scholarships, but it's open to anybody. And they height and weight you, do the combine stuff, the broad jump, vertical, just like you see on the NFL. And then they take you and they do position work. So you're working with the college position coach, and then you go compete in one-on-ones and things of that nature against each other. That's the best way to get exposure, and that's what I advise the kids that I train now, as well as, you know, my high school guys. I go, most people, coaches, want to see you in person and want to get a chance to coach you, to see A, your ability, but B, the kind of person you are. So we create a spreadsheet with a lot of the colleges one day information on it, and send it to the kids, and then they kind of pick out. And I tell them, you know, pick five, go to five and pick a D1 school, D2, you know, whatever level that you want to, but get a cross section so you can see what the coaching's like at every level and do that. But it's really a great opportunity for the kids to get to see the facilities, see the talent level, but also for the coaches to see them. So you don't have to be rated, you know, 4 or 5 stars. You can actually just show up there and compete against those kids, and you stand out and kind of make your way, so to speak. So guys that have a passion and kind of have an elite talent, that's really the way to go. And I know baseball has something similar, you know, in the AAU section, and basketball kind of does the AAU thing too. But, you know, if you have that kind of talent, just being around places where the college coaches can see you is really important. I know when Bren was playing baseball, we used to go down to Georgia to the Wood Bat Tournament, and holy smokes, the amount of college and pro guys that were there. So looking for those venues to be able to showcase your skills when you feel like you're kind of moving in the direction that you're going to have an opportunity is what you want to look for.
That's great. Well, thanks for sharing those insights. So I wanted to make sure we spend a few minutes talking about some of your experience as a parent of a child with high aspirations and high potential. How did you balance the needs of the high potential athlete with the importance of other aspects in their childhood development, academics, other interests, or some of your experiences and any advice you might share?
I think one of the benefits of if you're really a serious athlete is you have to be on a regular training regime. You can't take a day off. You have to do something little every day. Now, when you say that, people automatically have the perception that you're working 2 hours a day, which is not true. If I had Bren and I needed him to get better with his feet or it was a day we're going to work on our feet, we might do an agility drill to take 20 minutes and he's done. But you have to do something that's going to make yourself better every day with regard to that. And so, you know, balancing the self-discipline that you need to do that to be physically better is the same thing to be academically or mentally better. It's the same self-discipline and character concept. So I would always relate to my kids. I say, look, if you're here in football and you start at wide receiver and you're getting a D in math, there's a disconnect. There's a problem with your passion for wanting to do that and just be your best all the time. So I tell them, it's no good if you're good, you give your best in one thing and then you selectively decide you're not giving your best in another. That's not the way kind of people we want to be. We're going to do our best all the time. So I think the carryover between being good at one thing and then being good at another, when you point it out to people, most of the kids will respond in that manner when you hold them accountable. So just that basic concept of give your best effort all the time. If you're good in one thing, you should be able to give your best effort in the academic environment, whether you've got chores, clean the house right, et cetera, et cetera. That kind of philosophy and personal pride is not a light switch you turn off and on. It's got to be on all the time.
I love that. Excellence, it's a state of mind and a way of life, not an a la carte menu. I love that. That's really, thank you for sharing that story. And I think a lot of our parents and kids will hopefully take that to heart. Another thought was parents often struggle, especially the ones that are deeply involved in their children's sports, as you were, that it sometimes can consume or in some negative cases damage the parent-child relationship. Any lessons learned or recommendations that you can share from raising a great athlete as you did with Bren and being a coach but also maintaining a good, healthy parent-child relationship?
Yes, and I have a handbook that I give to the parents that I work with now. And what I tell them is you need to focus on skill development and not on the outcome. If you can see consistent progress with them being able to be more consistent in executing the skill and or doing the skill, something in the skill they haven't seen them do before, then you praise that and focus on that, not on hitting 6 home runs or throwing 10 touchdowns. It doesn't matter at the youth level. Nobody really notices or cares. And it takes away that anxiety. And so that's why when I work with parents, I give them my drill set. I teach them, hey, here's what you look for in each drill. And watch for them to improve and do the drill right, whether it's simple 3-step drop and you come to balance at the top and the first time the kid's off balance and 3 weeks later he's on balance and he does it right. Those are the things you can see your son getting better at. And then it relieves your anxiety. Because all that catches up to them. But if you don't focus on skill development and your relationship with your kid, and it's all about winning, and it's all about him being the best on the baseball team or on the basketball court, it's too early in the youth stage because nobody cares. Nobody cares if they're MVP or their 10-year-old basketball team. It doesn't matter. The question is going to be, will his skill continue to develop so that when he gets to high school, when he gets to middle school, he wants to go to college, will his skill development be on the same par or better with the people that he's going to be judged against? So I always encourage them, get rid of the, hey, he's the best guy in 9 years old, because it doesn't matter. It's his skill set still developing. So that's what I focus them on and what I gravitate them to. And then in the long term, it becomes healthy. And I did that with Bren. I never talked about, hey, the baseball coach is telling you this, do that, or the guy messed up, or he should have done this. All I ever did was watch him, and then I encouraged his skill development. For example, if he struck out at the plate, I'd say, hey, what do you think you did wrong that you admit you struck out? And he'd give me an answer, and I said, well, let's go to the cage and work on that then. So it was just a constant, let's just keep getting better at the skills so we have control over the process and the performance.
Fantastic answer. That's going to be so helpful to many of our listeners. So with a little bit of time left we've got on this segment, looking back, what did you enjoy most about the parent-coach journey with your son?
I would probably say just the camaraderie, because, as I mentioned before, it was always about could we get to another level of physical performance and mental performance, mental consistency. In other words, you know, if you can execute your three-step drop and throw the out pattern once, why can't you do it every time? And so it was the camaraderie of he wanted to be the best and most consistent he could be, and then I wanted to have the knowledge base to continue to progress him. And I did that with all my kids, and I tell them all up front, you know, that's my role, is to not let your physical and mental ability get ahead of what I'm able to teach you or give you. So the biggest thing, you know, that I enjoyed was just the challenge of walking him through how to become mentally consistent and elite and physically consistent and elite. And he took that challenge, and then that led to good performances because that's what we focused on. And that became a camaraderie. It wasn't about, oh, we need to win the state championship or we need to do this. But, you know, I'm his father, obviously, but you also end up becoming almost like his friend who's there to help him reach his full potential.
What a great...
So you wear a couple different hats, and that's really probably the best thing is having that relationship where he knows you're a source he can go to get better. And that's really what parents should want to be. You know, if your kid's swimming, learn everything you can. I mean, I was a really good baseball player, but I never really was taught how to play it. I just did what I did. But I used to go to the high school baseball coach in the high schools I was at and say, hey, what do I need to tell Brenda to do? What are the drills I can give him? So if they just do the research and study it and find the information, their relationship with their son or daughter is going to go to another level because they'll start viewing them as an expert.
That's what a great description, and again, terrific advice for our parents out there. So with that, we're going to have to take our final break here, and we'll be right back for our last segment with Bill Renner. Welcome back to Players Next Live. I'm Rob Jeske, and we're coming down the home stretch of our time today with Bill Renner, legendary football coach, parent, author, and performance consultant. Bill, since this is our last segment before we take some listener questions, how can our listeners connect with you if they want to talk to you about training or performance advice?
Sure, Rob. They can go to my website at www.billrennerfootball.com, or they can email me at brenner404@aol.com, and you'll also find my phone number on the website, so you know they can feel free to contact me any one of those ways.
That's great. I think you'll probably get some folks reaching out with everything you've shared. So the last part of the show, we'd like to get some parents and kids to ask some questions, so we'll start out with our first one. Anthony, a dad from Hillsboro. My 12-year-old son loves football and has goals within the game. Any advice for off-season training and development for his age?
Yes. They should always be doing things physically to get better. Agility work, and then they should always be doing skill work. Now, the interesting thing there is you need to do those simultaneously. So if Anthony is he's an offensive lineman, he should be doing footwork specific to offensive linemen and those kind of drills. But then he should also be doing some type of physical training to be better, whether it's, you know, running for cardiovascular or footwork drills that just make you run faster, or, you know, plyometric stuff that makes you explode better. So marrying those two things together at the same time is what he should be doing. And as I mentioned in a previous section, you need to do something like that every day to pull out the potential that you have. It's when you go in dormant and you don't do anything that you're really behind the development curve there.
Great. Well, thank you for that answer, and best of luck, Anthony. Our next question is from Jackson, a 13-year-old in Raleigh. When is the right age to start weight room training? I hear different opinions.
Well, you can start weight training as early as 10 years old, as long as the repetitions and the amount of weight do not supersede you from gaining hypertrophy or from overloading the muscles. At that point, you want your technique to be great. So if you just used a bar, for example, to squat, just a little PVC bar, put it behind your shoulders. So there's different stages of development, but I mean, there's guys that are even as young as 8, and all you're doing there is teaching their body to move right. You're not teaching them to try to make them bigger, faster, stronger at that age, but they can learn the right techniques and movements in a safe environment with bands or with just simple PVC bars to teach them the right movements. And then when they learn the right technique, as they get older, they can start putting, weight on the bar. But even when I had 9th graders that would show up or even 10th graders in my weight training classes, I didn't let them put a lot of weight on the bar until they could absolutely move their body in the right way, because otherwise you're going to get injured. So there's not necessarily a perfect time to start in terms of adding weight, but there's always a perfect time to be able to learn to move the right way with those exercises. And you could be 8 years old, as long as you have the right supervision and the right, motivation of just learning to move right and do that kind of stuff.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks for that answer, Bill. And best of luck to you, Jackson. The next question comes from Chayla, a mom in Durham. My son plays football and feels he needs to add weight. What are your thoughts on safe ways from a nutrition and supplement standpoint to add weight?
I think that, a lot of the marketing is catered to people that are older like us in terms of what do you eat, the kinds of things you eat. I've always told my kids, young kids, those boys' hormones are raging so fast, the worst thing they can do is not eat enough. That typically when somebody comes to me with, I want to gain weight, I have them write down what they eat, and they think they're eating a lot. And, at that age, that 12-year-old, 11-year-olds on up to in their 20s, they need 4,000 to 5,000 calories a day if they're an active athlete. And if you typically have them write down, they're around 2,000 to 2,500. So I just tell them to eat seafood, which means whatever food you eat, whatever food you see, eat it, because to get enough calories. So I'm not a big proponent of going to GNC and buying that kind of stuff. I think if you just, eat 3 good meals and put some snacks in between there. I used to keep peanut butter and jelly and bread in our football office so the kids could come by, because they're just burning so many calories, just growing from their hormones raging. It's hard for them to get enough calories.
That's
so my recommendation is just take a chart, write down what you eat, go online, Google calorie counters, count it up, and if it's not in the 4,000 range, there's no possible way you're gaining weight. I would do that before I ever went and did any kind of supplements or spent my money on that.
Oh, terrific answer, and I think there's a lot of good examples behind that. So here's the next question is a fun one. So Jason, a 15-year-old in Chapel Hill, I love football and would like to pursue a career as a coach. Any suggestions about a path and how to make that happen?
Sure. Obviously he loves it, so he's probably playing, which I think is really good. And learn as much as you can, not just in your position, but just kind of what the coach's thoughts are and how he's calling plays and how he's scheming things, or just the flow of the game. And then, if you play in high school and you're done, I would recommend if you go to college and you don't play, then I would go to the football office and I would talk to the coach about being a manager or being a stat guy or helping the program, because every college program needs anywhere from 15 to 20 students to help. And that's a great way to learn the game, the insides of the game, to be out on the practice field. And coaches really love when guys like that show up to help. So play in high school if you can. If not, just ask the coach to be involved in the program. And then if you can play in college, that's another great way to be involved and network, as to be in the program. And you don't have to be a starter or a star. Being involved in the program and seeing how things are run, And then if you don't play college, just go by the football office, and I'm telling you, be welcomed with open arms, because they need a lot of people to help. And A, you'll have a great time, and B, you'll start to learn, you know, about the coaching part. The biggest thing young people sometimes get to do, they're afraid to ask. So coaches love it if you knock on their door and said, hey, I want to understand about your wide receiver drills. Those guys love that stuff. And they love sharing it with potential and future coaches and young coaches. So just jump right in and get involved that way, and it'll happen.
And if he's not playing, it's probably even a case where that help would be welcome even at the high school level.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've had kids that have gotten injured, and I'll give them some assignments like, hey, take this video and go there and write down all the numbers. See, tell me who's playing what position, and go over with them and give them little assignments like that. Maybe it was a kid's senior year and he had a shoulder injury and mom and dad wanted him to be involved. I said, no problem. I got jobs for him. And he'll come to practice. Maybe he's a receiver guy, would chart my stats. But there's always things to do to keep kids involved that either can't play because of injury or just simply you don't have the physical tools but want to coach or be involved with the sport.
That's terrific. And you know, like sports is now a big world. It's not just the players. There's coaches, there's administration, there's marketing, management. So if you love sports, there's a way to stay involved. Well, sadly, folks, this is brings us to the end of our time with Coach Bill Renner. It's gone way too fast. And, Coach, we can't thank you enough for joining us today. All the best with your various activities and endeavors and helping kids. And we hope to have you back on the show in the near future.
Rob, I really enjoyed it. I appreciate you having me, and if I can ever help you or anybody in the organization or anybody listening, please feel free to call on me.
Well, thank you. Well, best of luck, and we'll definitely be in touch soon. As we wrap things up for today's show, Players Next wants to hear from you and help us shape future shows. Many thanks to our sponsors, Revels Turf and Tractor, your local John Deere dealer, and their exciting high school signature field program, Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks, healthy, fun snacks for lunch, after-school classroom parties, and even at halftime. Be sure to visit Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks at Amazon.com by searching Educational Snacks. We'd also like to thank VGM Club and the local Green Beagle Lodge for their support. Thanks to our producer, Aaron Johnson, and the entire WCHL team. You can follow our progress on Twitter, at Players Next, or online at WCHL On Demand. Thanks again to our listeners for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed today's journey and you choose to join us again. And once again, many thanks to Coach Bill Renner for his terrific insights and his time today. With that, I'm Rob Jeske, and on behalf of everyone at Players Next, remember, it's your dream.